Connor Swalm totally over-delivers on this one, and I'll explain. Normally, when I pick a theme for what we're going to do and I pick a guest, I'm thinking to myself, what are you thinking about on a Monday afternoon that you need to solve? And I know that this idea of attracting Gen Z talent may not be your Monday morning problem, but when I met Connor, I thought he was remarkable enough that something great was going to come out of this interview. And it did. We got some really incredible insights into not just how Connor runs a really great company and how he attracts culture and how he's this extraordinary 27-year-old, but we got some really, really big insights into how Gen Z approaches the world and how it's different than the generations before it and why. And I think it's really, really going to help you understand this idea that, man, if he's just 27 years old and this is a growing piece of our workforce, why are the trends around you happening the way that they're happening? I think looking into his mindset and what he's done and the way he's been able to grow this company and the success that he's having is going to give you some clues into how you can approach your marketing, your culture, your recruiting, things of that sort. This was, as always, a live internet talk show that we meet up on Mondays at 4:30 p.m. Eastern. And afterwards, we had like 10, 12 people stick around for what we do after the show, which is our relationship-driven growth strategy sessions. Now, if you stick around till after this podcast, you're going to hear my number one takeaway from this thing and the next conferences that I have coming up to that I think you should join so we can meet in person. So whether you join me at a conference, you join me on the show and stick around for strategy sessions, you just come from strategy sessions, you just come for the show, whatever you want, I'm really happy that you're here. I never take it for granted that I have your attention. And I think you're really going to enjoy your time with Connor Swalm.
If you know how it is, then you know how it might be. But think what it would look like if you grow your own community. It ain't easy. That's why you're listening to hear experiences from others just like you and me. Welcome to the B2B Community Builder Podcast, a show that was started because if you can unlock the power of having a community around your business, then you will create a source of referrals, validation, marketing content, and product feedback that will be unbeatable. But who has time to think about building a community when you need to be making sure that your team has what it needs to succeed in serving clients and bringing in revenue? That is why we'll be talking to business leaders like you and I that have cracked the code on why the community play is so valuable, how to implement tactics that got them there while still serving short-term goals, and what they can teach you that they have mastered. This show is for you if you are a CEO, CMO, or simply a rainmaker that has realized that without a community, you are just a commodity, but haven't figured out how to add it to your infinite list of priorities. This show is for you if you are a community professional or trying to be a community professional that is trying to convince leadership about the need to invest in a community strategy. This show is not for you if you think transactions are more valuable than relationships. I am your host and chief executive connector, Pablo Gonzalez, co-founder of BeTheStage.live, a marketing company that specializes in relationship-driven growth. I invented the relationship flywheel, and hopefully I'm your new best friend. So smash that subscribe button, leave a rating when you do, and get ready to plug into the power of community creation for business development. Let's go. We are live on Facebook for the B2B Community Builder Show, Season 5. I'm your host and chief executive connector, Pablo Gonzalez. And today on the show, we got a guy that from the moment that he popped on my screen on Zoom at one of our common friends, office hours calls, Jerry McNamara with Proven Chaos, I'm like, this dude is different. And I've been wanting to pick his brain in front of other people since I met him. His name is Connor Swalm. He is the founder and CEO of Finn. He is a past real estate agent. He's a uncommonly wise and self-aware person for any age, but I'm going to use him as the example for why I really believe in Gen Z And no pressure to Connor, but he is now going to be the prototype, like the universal soldier of what we're going to model Gen Z talent around. So I'm just going to pick your brain, and it's going to speak for a whole generation. Connor, welcome to the show. No big deal.
Yeah, I'm okay with speaking for a whole generation. You know, I think I can fit.
I believe that about you, man. I feel like you are cool and confident and can handle all sorts of pressure. So I'm excited for this conversation. I'm excited to welcome Suzanne Taylor King to the audience. Welcome, Suzanne. I love having you around and appreciate you making time for this show. So you know that this is a interactive show. If you want to ask Connor a question, pop it into the Q&A. We'll get you going here. And then after this, we will be rolling into a relationship-driven growth strategy session. So without further ado, star of the show, Connor, man, I think the way that you talk and all this stuff, it attracted me immediately. But then as I started talking business to you and I saw your website, and your website's just like phenomenally well done, and you're telling me about the way that you acquire clients and the way that you kind of like approach community and the way that you lead is really, really interesting to me. But what I want to first start off in is right before we started, you were talking about being at this conference and talking to people who at first weren't really paying attention to you. And all of a sudden they're like, well, you're everywhere. And I really like the mission that you're on. What is the mission that you're on, man? What is it?
So there's my internal mission. Then there's the vision that I have for my company, Finn. But my internal mission is really simple. It's to build cool things with cool people for other cool people. So basically, I want to work with a group of people that I really enjoy to build a product that we end up selling to people that I also really enjoy working with. So kind of the next iteration, like everyone's heard, you know, you got to work with people you enjoy. The next iteration I've gone beyond that is like, well, I don't even want to have a client that I don't enjoy working with, which, you know, some people might say you might end up cutting off clients or whatever that you could have worked with. But I've actually found that having that perspective has attracted so many other cool people to me that they're like, hey, you guys are everywhere. All my friends say great things about you. Because everybody talks. And they're like, oh, what is this? What do you do? Why do you do it? How do you do it? And why do I hear about you everywhere? I'm like, I don't know, dude. Who are you talking to? And what do you want to know?
So you're basically saying that this interaction that we're having right now of me fawning all over you from the moment I met you happens all the time. Is that what you're saying?
Not all the time. You know, got to keep my ego in check, Pablo, or I'm not going to fit out my bedroom door after this. So I won't say all the time, but I have gotten a few. There have been a few people. They're like, hey, you seem really interested. It's really about interest. It's like people really like to be a part of something that's happening or feel like they're a part of something exciting. Yeah. And I'm like, hey, I'm on this mission. You want to come watch me do it? I'm doing it all in public. You want to come be a part of that? I'm always looking for great people to hang out with and make new friends. So be a friend of mine if you want.
I love it, man. I love it. Very similar to my mission. You know, I phrase it a little bit different, which is community creation for business development, but it's you articulate what I mean. Like, I really just want to be friends with the people that I have around me and attract great people and find ways to win together. Right. So that's your personal mission. So you're in a cybersecurity. Tell us a little bit about your business so people understand the context of which you're operating from.
Yeah. So that I would say that personal mission has really informed how we've grown so far, but it's not necessarily where we're going. It's like the culture of our company is always building cool things with cool people for other cool people. But the vision is to end what I call human vulnerability. I want to create a space in cybersecurity called human vulnerability management that goes beyond training people to recognize threats and actually pulling in all of their data that they're generating by using certain tools and browsers and at their work. You know, there's a lot of monitoring software on your work devices and all that stuff. Is I can pull all that information into how I train you and how I assess your knowledge and then effectively end the way a hacker would do it. Because I'll do it first. I want to just be, you know, I can think maliciously like that, or, you know, if you want to think fooling people, that's what we're doing. We're fooling people. So I can do that first. And then train them to recognize it when it's real. That's the vision for Finn.
Got it. So that's the vision. It's manifested as like a SaaS product, as what does the actual product look like right now?
The SaaS platform. It's actually a combination of a few of them. So I don't know if you found this in other industries, but when we first started diving into this industry, we looked at all of our competitors. I did two things. One, I researched all my competitors. You know, people skip that step. People my age, at least, you know, the entrepreneurs. So I did the research. And the second was I connected with every founder of every single one of what would be my competitors on LinkedIn. And I DM'd them, said, hey, I'm going to build a company in your space. It's going to be doing what you're doing, but a little differently. Do you want to meet? A lot of them took me up on that. A lot of them didn't. A lot of them still don't. But I met a lot of really cool, interesting people that way and created what was unintentionally a network of people who were willing to help me, even though I was going to end up stealing some of their business because they thought I was doing cool things with them. Like I started how they started. So
that's awesome. And you kind of find that in the community of like the tech startup community, you find that. I find that, I don't know if this translates, but I know that you were in real estate before this.
Yeah.
My experience in the real estate community has been a lot like that too, right? Like this idea of just like, yeah, man, this young guy is trying to like make some money. Like I was trying to make some money. I'm going to give him some mentorship. Did you kind of like, was that like that when you were coming up in the real estate game before? And did you kind of learn from that?
Oh yeah. I started as a real estate investor when I was 19. So I just gotten into college. I was starting my sophomore year of college and had a bunch of loans, had no money, and a car that didn't work half the time. And I was like, well, damn, this needs to change. And just started flipping houses. And so I didn't really have, you know, the nice conversation that we've been having. It's been a well thought out process that I've like worked through. It's like, this is what I'm doing. This is why I'm doing it. And this is how we can create a community. I didn't have any of that when I was 19. I just knew it's like, I need money. I need to go do this thing. This is how I'm going to do it. Anybody who can, please help me. And I was fortunately way younger than I am right now. 7 years. I don't know if way, I might've offended some people in the crowd here, but hey, I was 19. So everyone was like, all right, I want to go help this kid, whatever he's doing. Fell on my face in more ways than one. Sometimes fell on my face twice at a time, which was really impressive when you think about it, but ended up getting through it, getting some help and never stopped.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome, man. And I want to welcome Pratiti, my friend Pratiti, who is really passionate about helping people right around your exact age group. So 7 years ago, you're 19 years old. That puts us in like 2015 in the real estate industry. I would assume that, or at least I, from my college experience, I had like one friend, Stephen Patagna, who was like a sophomore in college and trying to flip houses. And of course, he's like the most driven dude ever. So I assume you've always been a pretty driven guy.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, I grew up, I was a very large kid and all I did was play video games growing up. So there was definitely a switch at some point. It was two things. I realized that about eighth grade, it's like girls really don't like dudes who play video games all day and are really, really, really out of shape and unathletic. It's like, huh, well, I got to go fix this. I can't play World of Warcraft for 20 hours a day anymore. So there was a time when I wasn't, but then that transitioned.
Awesome. So it turned on for you at an early age. Driven dude.
Oh yeah.
Went through real estate. You had some major failures, right? Like
a lot of them.
Then, and that the way that you describe it, this kind of taught you humility. That failure rate, is that accurate?
Humility is probably. I think I summarized this in a LinkedIn post recently, but it taught me, it kept my ego in check. So up until that point, I had, without sounding egotistical, succeeded at everything I'd ever done up until my, and I was 19. So what have I really done by the time I was 19? But, you know, I went to school. I was always top of my class. I had went to college as a junior in high school to study math because my school ran out of curriculum because I had all completed it all. Studied math in college, was getting top marks started doing real estate investing, did that really, really well. And then like basically got to a point where anything I touched turned to gold and anything I thought must have been the truth. Like that was my internal narrative. I didn't really know that at the time. Looking back, it's very clear that's exactly what had happened. And then I just made all of the wrong mistakes in one specific. So the scenario was I was flipping four homes at a time, tapped all of my credit with investors, which was just shy of $2 million for the first three homes and some other projects we were finishing up, and put all of my own money into this fourth home. And I had advisors telling me not to get this fourth home. I had my dad telling me not to get this fourth home. I had people telling me to do more research. And basically I was like, you know, you lesser folk don't know what you're doing. I say we should get this, and ended up losing about $100,000 of my own money. And that taught me a few things. One is, I can make mistakes and I can make really big mistakes. And the second was, I have no idea what I'm doing, turns out. And so took about 6 months of depression and anxiety and not getting out of bed and just wishing I didn't wake up in the morning for that painful experience to go into a productive lesson that I could take moving forward with me, that I still hold very dear to my heart this day is I am fallible. I don't know what I'm doing most of the time, but there are some really smart and kind people that can help me out.
You learned that like 10 years ahead of me easily, right? Like for me, it was probably around like 28, 29. When did you learn the lesson of the value of a mission, right? Like I have to assume that by now you've realized that this like mission that you're on, it's easier for people to enroll into like something cool than like the thing that you want, like making it look good for them. Like when did you learn that as a leadership lesson?
Probably fairly recently. I've always been a bit of like, I wanted to do things my own, like went back to the ego. It's like, nobody else could possibly know how to do anything better than me because I'm the one that's been doing it right the entire time. And then you get to a point where that's flip-flopped and you're like, wow, it's like, I'm really going to need the help and the support and the vision and the buy-in from other people. And like, I realized that after failing miserably and I was like, well, okay, well, how can I get these people to want to work with me? So I want to work with them now. How do we reciprocate that one? And it came down to, well, I don't think I'm really smart anymore. I am a hard worker. So like, what can I really offer them? It's like, I'll just be a good person. You know, I've worked with people that are, turns out, not really good, that I wasn't really a good fit. So I just thought, number one, let's be humble because it's all I had at that point. I didn't have any more ability to rest on my previous successes because they all disappeared. And I was like, I'll just be a good person. And if people want to come along with that, they will. I kind of fell into it, to be honest. I didn't have like a structured way of like, people need to buy into my vision. It was like, all of a sudden I looked at all the people that were around me and my I got to credit my co-founder Josh with most of this because he's just an awesome guy. And we kind of looked around one day, we're like, huh, it's like, we got a solid group of really awesome people here. It's like, we're at like 6.5. I say half because we have a contractor that works with us when he's not in college. He won't quit just yet, but I've been trying to get him to drop out. We looked around, we're like, wow, it's like, we really like the people that are involved. We like what we're doing. We like how we're doing it. We like who we're doing it for. It's like, how did this happen? So, it turns out we just really focused on being good people, found a problem that somebody wanted to pay us to solve, and kept our, that's guiding sense of morality the entire time through the process. And it got really hard at some points. And I could get into this if you want to go into it in some other ways, but specifically, there was a point when I had to move back in with my parents because we didn't have any money. My co-founder had to borrow money from his parents or ask them, he didn't know if they'd give it to him, to pay his mortgage. And we had a huge service outage all in the same month. And the service outage was a secret. Nobody knew. Everything looked like it had gone according to plan. It would have probably been about $3,000 or $4,000 in revenue, which would have been enough to make the mortgage payment. And we had a choice. Me and my co-founder were like, well, so we can cheat our customers and keep this a secret and not have to go through potentially losing your house and me having to live with my parents forever. Or we can do the right thing. We could do the honest thing and say, hey, we're not going to bill you for this month. Here's what's happened. You know, here's a way for you to book a call with us if you want an in-depth explanation for specifically your instance of this. But like, we really, you know, we shit the bed on this one. We're sorry. We can't tell you how sorry we are. And we ended up taking that road because we realized it's like, this either goes under or it doesn't. But if it doesn't go under and we were dishonest, it's like, we're going to hate ourselves forever. So let's not do that. Let's just be good, upstanding people. And it worked out. We got through it. Turns out we got through it. So
what's the lesson there? Was the lesson there? Did it lead to, did that increase like your lifetime value of the client? Did that produce any kind of results? Did you lose clients over it?
Yeah. I lost one client over it. From all measurable metrics, was not the right decision, other than we felt like it would have been the wrong thing to do. That was it. So no, yeah. If we had people, investors or whatever on our shoulders at that time, they'd have been like, hey, like, this is revenue, deal with it. Be honest, but you don't have to be honest in this scenario because of XYZ, whatever the contract says, but yeah.
Interesting. All right. I want to come back to the sense of morality in a second, man. You said something of like trying to, you've been talking to your employee of like, he hasn't dropped out yet, but how do you value his experience in college right now versus experience with you?
Well, so he is a really talented software developer. Mm-hmm. He had been getting paid professionally as a software developer before he had left high school. Like, he's one of those savants of the technical world. And I know he's going through some of the same curriculum I went to. He's going to University of Delaware, just like I am, or I did. And also he's my cousin. So I see him all the time. And so he talks to me, you know, we hang out, we're friends, and he's like complaining that, you know, he can't learn anything from college because he's already learned it all being a career developer for 3 years by the time he got to college. I'm like, great. It's like, you're working with us from the very beginning. We have money. Let's pay you. Just drop out of college. Come work full time. He doesn't want to do it. So I don't value his college education because he doesn't value it himself. But if it's what he wants to do, I've never pressured him into being like, you have to do this. It's always like, hey, you know, just so you know, it's like options on the table. Do what you want. Live the life you'd like. We'll have a job for you when you're done. And when you're not in the middle of the semester, you can still come work with us full time.
Makes sense. Well answered. Sliding scale, right? Like I you know, and it almost feels like, I don't know about you, man, but I went straight into college. And I think that if I would have worked for 2 years and gotten my teeth kicked in like the professional world, I probably would have gotten a lot more out of college outside of, I got a ton out of college socially. Right? Yeah. And I just wonder how it's viewed these days, specifically like in the, I mean, for sure in your area of software, right? Like, and in the idea that you can get a real estate education on TikTok, out of like your peer group, are you seeing that be less valued? Is that a thing?
Oh yeah. Way less valued, specifically because if you wanted to get a job in software, your work will speak more, way more than any education you have. Now there's a lot of banks, there's a lot of financial institutions that'll require a 4-year degree, even though you don't really learn anything specifically applicable to them. But then there are a lot of other people on the other side of the coin, which say, you know, instead of showing me your 4-year degree, show me your what's called a Bitbucket or GitHub or code repo. Basically, hey, do you have anything cool that you've done on your own? All right, show that to me. And then you can dissect it and you can actually, it's kind of like looking at somebody do math, like high level math. You can kind of get an insight into how they solve problems. You can get an insight into the troubles that they ran into and how they got around them. Did they take all the shortcuts or did they do what was right, even though it was really hard? Because I don't know, the end goal was something way more scalable than a shortcut would have afforded them at the time. And so you'll have companies now that instead of sending you a resume, you'll send in that. And then they'll dissect it, ask some questions, and then you either have the job or you don't. And you can make that without going to college. Go online, go to a code camp. You can even do it for free, but you could pay 50, 60 bucks for a few courses online that over the course of 3 months will teach you how to do that. And then you'd be done.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, like I'm not in software, so it's not one-to-one, but I would assume that there is most non kind of like you need some kind of certification. Well, certification jobs, you can get a certification, right? But like for me, like I can definitely look at someone's social media account and be like, all right, this person's going for it. Like they know how to write, right? Like show me your blog, show me your YouTube channel. Yeah. Have you stood up a podcast? Have you, you know, what kind of the ability to do what you're doing, right? Like to grow in public, I think has completely permeated culture by your age and below. Somebody, you know, anybody that's trying to do anything significant is already experimenting with stuff at a young age and putting things out there, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I guess you're bringing into like more of a my culture, like my generation's culture, but the build in public mentality. Yeah. I guess that has been popularized by us. I viewed it as the opposite. I viewed it as popularized by startups that just, you know, we tend to work at because we can take more risks than somebody who has a family and a mortgage and whatever. Mm-hmm. So we'll work in a culture that is more likely to take those risks and say, hey, we're going to throw everything in public because, you know, we think it'll lead to people trusting us more. I think Dave Gerhart and a bunch of other, I forget who popularized it. That's exactly what we do. We've actually, this past conference. Yeah. We've had a few competitors at many conferences come up and say, why do you put everything you do online? Because I make videos. I show them everything.
Yeah.
Like, because I dare you to compete with us.
That is super interesting. You're right, man. So now the connection that I'm making is this idea that like the people that we were looking up to when we were growing up didn't do that stuff, right? Then like Steve Jobs comes around and he makes this like punk rock computing culture and being a rebel, right? So my generation grew up kind of like seeing that piece. You grew up seeing Elon Musk make Tesla's code completely open source, right? So I guess startup culture, like I didn't know there was no such thing as like startup culture when I was 16 years old, right? Like that just didn't, that just didn't really exist. It wasn't in the lexicon, but we have as a society grown up glorifying startup culture for the last like 10 to 15 years. Ergo, anybody that's gone through their teenage years in college has been seeing that as like the North Star. Therefore, it normalizes them from like an individual standpoint. That makes a lot of sense. So like this comfort to like learn in public is new. Like you don't see dudes much older than me being comfortable with like egg on their face. Right?
No. Typically, I don't know exactly how old you are, so I won't.
41. Age
you.
I'm 41.
Okay, 41. You're well into a career, so it's like if you wanted to go build something, you don't need to build it in public. You have the connections, you have the relationships with the people you would work with, and with the people you'd sell to already. I don't have any of that, so.
But look at the value of the giant failure that you had a few years ago, right? So, like, if we're not able to endure that stuff, then it's like, how do we internalize these great lessons that you can have these profound realizations of?
Oh yeah, absolutely. The number one lesson that came from, other than the check-in, self-check of my ego, was the it kind of really scopes, and people who have been through really hard things in life, like the death of a family member or of a kid or of a spouse, they tell you, it's like, wow, it really puts into perspective the things that we complain and worry about on a regular basis, because none of that really matters. Turns out, it's like, we're all going to die. Nobody's going to get out of here alive. Why do we worry about any of it? I was 19 at the time. You know, I don't worry about a thing in my life, and I feel like I'm going to live forever and I'm Superman, right? That's every 19-year-old on the planet. And then it's put things in perspective. It's like, huh, it turns out the things that I did worry about, like people thinking I was a cool guy, it's like, none of that matters. I don't care anymore. It's like it re-scopes things that you can get through. So now when I come up against adversity, like customer doesn't want to buy from us, or we miss our sales targets, or I don't know, something else happens in the company, it's like, well, this isn't anything I should, you know, worrying about is different, but it's nothing that stresses me out because I've already had it scoped for me. It's like, this is really small. This is a problem we can definitely figure out. I'm okay with it.
I like that, man. That's cool. All right, let's go into, so you have your mission, you have your personal mission, you have your company mission. Are you guys, is core values a thing for you as a company? How do you, or how do you incorporate like the mission and your personal vision and these kinds of things kind of into your everyday management / company culture?
So we don't have it in like a handbook or anything. I'm sure it'll make it into that somehow. It's really the people that we've brought on board has all been a really informal style of, we've either known them or they were recommended to us. Mm-hmm. And it's been a really informal style of hiring that had nothing to do with the skills that we thought they might have had, and everything to do with who they were. So we would spend hours and hours and hours talking with them, who they are, what they want, why they want those things, what they want to do, what do they value, what do they not value, what do they want to be when they grow up, so to speak, and getting to the bottom of like who these people really are and why they make decisions, not necessarily the decisions that they make, because that's really important to me specifically. And that gets us to a level of understanding between each other where it's like, okay, the things that I value most are honesty, integrity, and hard work. It's like, if you can't be honest with yourself, you can't be honest with me. If you don't have integrity with the way you do things, like you can screw up. I screw up all the time. It's like, if you had integrity through that process, I don't care. So we'll learn from it, move on. And if you're not willing to work hard, because all of this is going to be hard, we're doing the impossible every day when we wake up. If you're not ready for that level of challenge, we're going to need to find somebody else who might be a less technical fit, but a more cultural fit. So that's kind of how we've instilled those specific things moving forward, is those are just the expectations. And we're very clear from the start. It's like, this is what we value. This is why we think you are that person. What are your thoughts? And it's really interesting to hear when you tell somebody, this is what I think of you. So what do you think about yourself? It's like the responses you get are very interesting.
Interesting. All right. So let me rephrase that to you, right? So you spend a bunch of time working in the trenches with someone, like you have some kind of like working test of somebody / you're taking them out to lunch / are you planning kind of like these interactions? How are you getting to know them? Like, what is the get to know you mechanism for you to evaluate and then tell them what you think of them?
All the above. we take them out to lunch. We invite them over to meet the team and work with us. It's like, hey, do you have a free night or a free weekend or a free couple of hours? Come by the frat house is what my fiance calls it, because we all live and work together. Come by the house, work with the team. Are you a fit? Do they like you? More importantly, it's like, I'm not going to be working with you directly much longer because of the size of our team now. But if they like you, that's all I need to know. It's like, I've let them make the decision for me because I trust that, you know, they're a part of this too. Spending time with them. It was very informal, probably definitely not scalable, definitely not recommended by any recruiter you'll ever work with. It was what I wanted to do, though, what my co-founder and I wanted to do. Like when we brought on our first employee, we did it at a time when we had no revenue, very little revenue, and we were about to get funding and then ended up walking away from that deal. And we skateboarded to a park. It's a half a mile that way. And we sat down at the park and talked for like 5 hours. And that's all we did. We just got on skateboards and talked and hung out and got to know each other. It's like, what are you worried about? This is what I'm worried about. Here's what we can, like, just complete honesty. And then at the end of that conversation, his name's Kurt. He was like, this is awesome. This is exactly what I'm looking for. I'm like, no money and really hard labor. I was like, I just want to be clear. It's like, I've not lied to you, correct? Like, this is your expectation. And he's like, no, like, this is the exact kind of, I'm done with the soul crushing work of working at, I'm not going to say the name of the company, large, very, very, very large company. This is exactly what I'm in for. And I was like, all right, sign the paperwork tomorrow, then you'll be on board.
Oof, that was a golden nugget right there. I'm going to have my team clip that and paste that across all my social media channels. So if you could just give this a pause right now, go into the show notes and connect with me on whatever platform you like to follow me on, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, whatever you want to be a part of my life in, connect with me there. I'm going to share that clip and you can share it with your friends so that they get the same lesson. It'll be adding value to their life. And while you're at it, go ahead and subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Hit 5-star review, right? You don't have to leave a review. You just got to hit 5 stars. If you want to leave a review, cool. And maybe send the episode to your friend. That would be awesome. That's it. I'm done. Back to the show. Awesome. Awesome. I love that, right? So it's get to know them. Just bare your soul. Tell them that you're trying to work on something great and that that they're going to be a part of something. Be completely transparent about your insecurities. Oh, yeah. And at the end of the day, so what was, he was working at another big company and he was just like, I'm done getting, you know, stepped on my face and I want to just try something different. Was he interviewing at other jobs too? Or was this just like a relationship that y'all had together?
It was a relationship we had.
Yeah.
And we just, we wanted him to come on board because he had lived with us. And he's like, I am done feeling like I'm not important. I know that I'm important. I'm done feeling like I'm not. I'm done doing the same repetitive task every day that I know doesn't impact any part of this company doing anything, really. I want to feel like I'm important, like I'm doing something important. I'm doing it for important people. I was like, well, it turns out, Kurt, the only thing I can guarantee you are those three things. It's like, if you wanted a salary, you're going to have to wait, hop in line, and we're going to have to go raise some money. This was like a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
But those three things, it's like, you'll work directly with customers on something that they have pain with today, doing it with people just like us. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm in, I'll quit tomorrow. And then he quit and we're like, oh, wow. You were serious. All right, let's do this.
Awesome. So meaning, relevancy, like all these things, super, super valuable. What does it look like now, man? Like you said, your team has grown. You said 6.5 a second ago. Is that how big your team is right now? Or that was at the time when you told the story?
No, our team was just me and my co-founder at that story. Yeah. We're 6.5 now, 4 software developers. I don't count myself anymore. They don't let me write code. And then we hired our first non-developer, a partner success manager, who is actually one of my best friends since kindergarten. Called him up, complained. I didn't even want to hire him, honestly. I complained because we were best friends. I complained to him that we had, you know, put out a job offer. Nobody was taking the bait. And those that did, you know, they'd get through one round of interviews and meeting us, and then they would go accept another position. And he's like, can I put my resume in? I was like, what? I said, you have no interest. Like, you're interested? He's like, yeah. I was like, all right, put his resume in. And we talked with him. And then I talked to my co-founder and I said, all right, I have one crisis. Like, I love this guy to death. It's like, yeah. I'm definitely going to want to work with him, regardless of if he's a fit or not for our company. It's like, you have no idea who this person is. So you talk with him on your own. And if you walk away from that conversation and you think it would be a if you think anything less than it would be a mistake not to give this guy the opportunity today, it's like, we're not going to work with him. So you need to come away feeling like it would be a mistake if we let him go. He came away from that conversation. He's like, this guy is awesome. It would be insane if we didn't give him the opportunity. He's going to work really hard with us. He's dedicated to the mission. He's a huge cultural fit. And you already know him. Like, you already love this guy to death. So it'd be a mistake not to give him the job. I was like, all right, called him up. I was like, you have the job. And he's like, oh, thanks for hiring me. He's like, you gotta give Josh a hug when you see him. It wasn't me. That's how it was a big, big step for us, hiring a non-developer.
Yeah. Yeah. I would imagine it would. So how do you judge in this like kumbaya culture of like, everybody loves each other, right? Like, how do you judge success for people? Like, how do you make sure that they're living up to their end of the bargain? How do you make sure that you're living up to your end of the bargain?
So a few ways. One is when we brought this partner success manager board, we made a 30-90 day plan with metrics that we thought he could hit. And we didn't treat him any differently than we would have treated somebody who had expertise in that field. We said, we'll give you all of the resources you need to succeed. We'll teach you everything you need to know about the industry. His job is to increase usage. So he needs to learn how to talk to these people. And I said, but here are the metrics you're going to have to hit. And here's the support I'm willing to give you. If I fall short on meeting with you when you need or answering your questions on a timely basis or just anything like that, it's like, you need to tell me right away, because I'm going to hold you to these metrics regardless. So if you're not helping us deploy more customers, if you're not keeping them on for longer, if retention doesn't stay high, it's like, you are the person that we will hold responsible for that. We're not going to blame you, but there's something that you're doing or not doing we would need to fix. It's like, so if that is, you need more information from us, it's like, that's unacceptable, because you should have told us immediately. It's like, don't be scared to ask the question. We're never going to be upset that you need more information, because we know that we're pretty much bad at disseminating it correctly anyway. So tell us, help us disseminate it. That's kind of been the give and take that we've had for the past 4 months.
Okay. All right. So that's setting clear expectations on the front end. How'd you get those metrics if it's the first time of you hiring somebody?
So we talked with a lot of industry experts. We have a bunch of advisors in this space. We kind of asked them, hey, can you introduce us to your partner success managers that you worked with? Can we call them? Can we talk to them? I met a few in person at other events. And then we also met with another advisor who comes from the big four consulting world. And I was like, I have no idea how to set expectations. I have no idea what metrics are important. And he spent hours and hours and hours with us unpacking our business, the role that we wanted this guy to fill, why we wanted it to fill. And he actually helped us kind of shape the role that we hired this guy for, and the metrics that we deemed were important. So I asked somebody else what they thought would be important and why, and then listened. And that's how I came up with it.
I see a pattern. I like that, man. What about, has there ever been like a bad apple, man? Has this whole like hiring your friends thing ever gone wrong?
Yeah, but not with one of our friends. I blame myself for this mostly, by the way. We brought on somebody. I don't think I made it clear what the expectations were. They were a developer. This was very early when we almost ended the company, actually, like a year and a half ago. And it didn't work out. This person wanted way more than they were due. They were toxic to work with. Everyone came to me and complained, like, this guy is demeaning. He says mean things about us. And like, we would get on calls together as a team. And like, he wasn't in the right mind space. So like, I met him one day here locally and I was like, you're done. So get out of here. Everyone's complained, pack up your bags and go. And that did not end up well. Almost ended up in court, and we ended up having we settled it outside and handled everything correctly, but the expectations weren't set up front. And then it became very clear. It's like, this person is incapable of working with us and also doesn't want what we want. So we need to separate.
Were his metrics good? Like, was he performing well on paper?
He was a very stellar software developer.
Okay.
One of the most talented we've ever met, for sure. Just couldn't work with the team.
Just bad culture fit. People weren't having a good time. Didn't fall into the cool people building cool things part of it.
Yeah. You'll hear the term if you talk to software developer stuff. He was a great lone wolf developer, one man show. And it's like, hey, I've been a one man show. I know where this ends. None of this will be a part of my company. You can't be a lone wolf here.
Interesting. All right, man, let's get into business development, right? Like you have this, one of the things that I found really interesting from you is this idea that you are relationship building all the time, yet you pride yourself on fiscal responsibility. Tell me how you business develop, how you go to market.
So I'm a very young person in a space that is filled with very elderly individuals. That was one of the first things I recognized. It's like, wow, it's like I need to gain the trust of people who I don't really connect with in any way, shape, or form. How can I do this? It's like, oh, I need to be their friend. And so I knew a couple of things. One, the type of client we wanted to target works with hundreds of companies at a time. So if I can get the trust of that client, I can get the implicit trust of their clients. I don't have time to go make 100 different connections with small businesses. I do have time to make connection with one that has the relationships with those 100. So I said, great. Nobody's going to trust that I can do anything in this space, nor should they. So I need to go make friends with these people. And if I make friends with these people in the right way, if I educate them on what I think should be done, if I show them that I have all of this goodwill, and if I build something, if I ask them for the feedback and build something directly related to their pain, it's like they'll be climbing over themselves to come work with me because I've built exactly what they've needed because I was humble enough to listen. And that is how I started. Is I don't know how to sell. Oh, my camera's messing up. I don't know how to sell. I do know how to tell a story, and I do know how to make a friend. It's like, so our selling now until we get, you know, an official sales team, which might come sooner than later, is just make a friend and tell a good story. It's like, hey, if you're a good fit, you're going to jive with exactly what I'm telling you right now. You're going to think everything I'm saying is the Midas touch, the problems we're solving, the pain you're feeling. If it doesn't match up perfectly, so there's probably going to be a lot of friction in this relationship anyway. Doesn't mean we can't work together in the future. And it doesn't mean you're not an awesome person. So let's just be friends, or let's just stay in touch and, you know, stay within the circle, but won't necessarily be a client.
So the strategy of going to the one client that could goes from one-to-one to one-to-many, right? Like that's super smart. Like laser focusing on that. How does a young man make friends with a crusty old guy?
I got started by dropping memes under their LinkedIn posts. And some of them thought it was really funny. And the ones that did, I figured would be a little closer to the kind of person that I would enjoy working for or with anyway, and listening to on a regular basis. And so I've done that for probably started over 2.5, almost 3, but way before COVID started is when I started doing that. It's just reaching out and intentionally connecting and saying, hey, I'm a young guy. Can I listen to you explain what you hate doing on a regular basis? And the ones that responded, they're like, wow, this is funny. Or yeah, this is awesome. Just that process over 3 years has really magnified into a huge group of people that have a huge amount of goodwill for us, which has been really cool to see. It's like an infection. That is a negative connotation, but you get what I'm saying.
I got you. Can't get rid of you. All right. It's cool, man. So I like that. So great strategy. Identify dream client that can lead one to many, connect on LinkedIn, and then immediately go into looking up when they do a post. Are you like, do you have like a cadence of like looking into their posts, and then you're relying in your like bank of native digital humor because you spend all your time on Reddit looking for stuff that they don't normally find in Twitter and stuff like that, and deploying? That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I didn't even need the bank. You know, I have it all right at my fingertips. Immediately when I'd read something, I know exactly what I need to put here. I have the meme template pictured in my head. I just go to an online creator, type in the words, send it. And that usually landed me in a connection request and a DM that was like, yo, that was really funny.
So you think in memes is what you're saying?
A lot of the time I do. You know, that is a very, you know, we had this debate. I am on the cusp of Gen Z and millennial, but that is a very Gen Z thing of me is, memes are awesome. Yeah, there's a lot of cultural relevance in memes. They tell a whole story as opposed to just a few words at a time. So
interesting. Cool, man. Yeah, I have a hard time thinking in memes, man. I like, you know, I guess it's the equivalent of thinking in like responses and movie quotes. Because I grew up like I had a 80s, 90s funny movie one-liner to respond to. Still to this day, it's mostly Jim Carrey movies, right? But like I still think that way. But I guess that's that. That's the translation of that. That's interesting, man. Where does it go from there? So you're dropping hilarious memes. And then if they're like, this is funny, you're like, let's hop on a call. I want to hear what your pain points are. How do I grow up to be like you? Like, what's your language? I use that terminology all the time, by the way. Like when I have a client that I really admire, I'm like, listen, I want to be like you when I grow up. So like, I want to spend as much time as you can around you. Right.
Yeah. It started with, an assumption where we'd say, hey, this is kind of what people are telling us. This is what we think you're struggling with right now in this specific area of cybersecurity, which is the problem we wanted to solve. Can you spend 30 minutes telling me if I'm right or if I'm wrong, or showing me how to do this better? That turned into enough individual conversations that enough people started to trial us from that. And it was like no strings attached. Just like anyone who would sign up to be on our platform was anyone I wanted on our platform. So it's like that turned into people trialing us out, which as soon as people have something to complain about, they start complaining, which is great. I needed that. And so that turned into, we now have a Slack community of about 75 clients and people who are involved in our community who complain on a regular basis. But also the cool thing is they help each other. I see that all the time. And then where it ended up now is we've separated those two things. So we have that client community and we have a council that we call it, an advisory council. So it's not official advisors who have, you know, an equity package or an options package with us. These are just an advisory council of ideal clients, some of which already use us, some of which don't. But everyone who I trust, it's really just a trust-based thing. Everyone that I trust has the best intention for Finn. Is on that council. So it's filled by about 16 of our closest clients right now. And some of them, even not our closest clients, is people who I trust who are not a client of ours. And we meet with them every 2 weeks and we say, this is what we're building. Here's what it looks like. Here's how it works. And then this is what we're planning on building. How would you suggest we do that? And we started that process 8 months ago. And it has turned into probably 3 or 4 key features that have now become the only selling points of our platform, because they directly solve the pain that all 16 of them have told us about.
What's in it for them to be on those every other week calls?
Right now, there's no monetary compensation. Some advisory councils do. There's no stock-based compensation. It is, they really like who we are as a company. They like what we're doing. And they love to see an example of a young company like us that cares for their community as much as they do and wants to do right by it. And so that is the only thing we've been able to promise them, is like, we can't guarantee we won't screw up. We can't guarantee we'll do everything right, but we can guarantee we'll always care about the community as much as you will. And they're like, all right, I'm in. I'll spend an hour with you every 2 weeks doing this.
I love that, dude. I talk to young people. You know, I talk about networking, relationship building often. And one of the main questions, and I'm like one of these people that wants to mentor everybody because I have a messiah complex, obviously. Yeah. But like, I'll talk to people your age or younger, and you know, networking, it's like, add value. How can you add value? You've proven that there is a direct amount of value that you can add, A, by being entertaining, and B, by showing that you are a good person that's really, really willing to learn, and C, because your generation is not afraid to build in public, right? Like to do something for free to prove to people that you're worthy of it. But yeah. it's such an underrated thing. I tell people, young people all the time, I'm like, if you're looking to add value to somebody that's like 3-4 levels above you in the rung of social stratosphere, never underestimate the idea that people want to have impact. And when they see a talented young person looking to do something right and seeking their validation and or modeling themselves around you, there is a definite sense of value that comes with that. And to be able to like, yeah, put it on scale by then bringing them all into a community and having other people kind of like be this council of folks that you're just like, let me just show up and see if I'm like you. And if you approve of my thing at scale, I think it's a genius, like feedback loop. That's a positive flywheel for you, man. I think that's great.
Yeah. And you mentioned something earlier. You said, you're seeing a common pattern. So that idea of that client community and advisory council, both of those ideas were not mine. They came from an advisor that responded to one of the memes that we put on the group chat. Turns out he is an awesome human being. His name is Wes Spencer. He is he's a really good friend of mine now. He is I can't explain it. He's just an awesome person. And he gave us his experience when he was building his startup that he ended up selling a few years back. and how the best way to create this goodwill in the community at large was those two ideas. And then he would spend, it took months of explaining how to build those for us to be convinced that it was worth our time. And because it's a lot of time, effort, and energy. And after a while, he's like, you have to do this now. And I was like, you know what? You're right. Can you help us seed the start of it? Can you bring us, you know, we have a few over here, but can you bring a few more? He's like, I got you. Don't worry about it. We showed up one Friday morning. There was about 11 people there. We're like, hey, this is the council. Welcome. And that's how it all started. But it wasn't even our idea. Now it's just been the most formative thing we've done, turns out, was that advice. And it's worked really well for us.
That's awesome, man. You are giving them a stake in your future by like letting them own a piece of it. And then that adds value to everybody else. Tell me about the other community, man. So how did you start the, so you have the council, right? Yeah. You have this other, is it all clients? Is it clients and prospects?
Clients and prospects. Yeah.
Clients and prospects. How do you see that thing, and how do you get interaction going and getting people to like be a part of it?
There's like a critical mass of sorts that you reach where there's enough activity going on. It's a Slack channel. So we use Slack internally, and we have like a million free guest passes for a single channel guest. Mm-hmm. So we're like, we got to use these. What do we want? It's like, well, we want more feedback. How do we get this? Well, anyone who's on our platform should have a direct line to our entire team. All right, let's make that happen. And then so we built that and invited over the last year everyone who's on our platform. So we have about 250 admin accounts. So we invited all of them. We invite everyone who trials our software to be a part of this channel. And this channel is called Questions and Answers, because basically what it is if somebody has a question, they put it in the chat. It's not a support request, but immediately gets answered. And then what it's turned into is anytime I'm on an onboarding with a potential client, they're test driving, whatever, they want to prove a concept with us, it is more effective for me to say, I'm a dirty vendor. Don't take a word I say as truth. Like, you've been screwed over so many times probably by now by other vendors, so you should not trust a word I say. Weirdly, that creates a lot of trust between us immediately. I'm like, you know what you should do though? I have this really awesome community of people in which none of them are paid to say good things about us. All of them are clients of ours or people just like yourself that are prospects. Do you want access to ask them questions and see how they're doing things? And they're like, yeah, I want to be a part of that. How do I get in? I'm like, what's your email? And I just invite them right away. Now they're actually they're selling for us. So it's like, hey, why should I use Finn? It's a question we've seen in the chat. Immediately, there's like a 14-point document that gets thrown. It's like, hey, I just made this. It's like, I don't even put that much effort and energy into why somebody should use us. Like, okay, I'm glad to see this. And then somebody else have a question. Hey, is this thing misconfigured? I'm seeing this, but not this. And I expected this. And then somebody else hops in the chat that's a client of ours. Like, oh, you know, we ran into that. Here's how you can fix that. Here's the knowledge base article that I helped them write because I was the first one that saw this. Here it is. You could just use it for free. It's like, this is awesome. It's like, this is way better than anything I could have potentially planned because they love talking about us. But two, keeps us honest. Because they do throw tomatoes when we deserve it. And I will be the first to tell you, if we deserve to get egg in the face, tomato in the face, it's like, we take it in stride. It's like, it's a culture shock for a lot of developers because they're lit. I call it like, they're on the metal. They're right next to the feedback. The customer, direct mouth into the developer's hands, change like writing code. And so it got really stressful for them. They're like, I can't deal with this. It's like, no. It's like, this is what help looks like. This is what people caring looks like. This is how it feels. It's like, this is not bad. This is somebody who cares enough to yell at us in a Slack politely. No, nobody gets to be disrespectful and tell us where we're screwing up because they don't think we have eyes on it. And we don't, because we don't have eyes everywhere. So this is never going to change. This is exactly how it should be. And that's been really cool.
Dude, that's such a great framing of it, right? Because I think everybody understands, like Eddie Yun was on the show not that long ago, and he's just like, there's nothing more powerful than somebody who's thinking about being your client, listening to two clients talk to each other about how much they love you, right? So like, that is way more powerful than the dirty service provider telling them anything, no matter what happens. But what people don't understand is the idea that building in public, as your generation has been like completely habituated to do, provides a level of accountability that is actually a great value. Like, it is much better to screw up, get called out on it, fix it in public, than it is to not have that feedback loop that you create with clients. And if you get both of those pieces right, you get what you're talking about. We see it in our JWB community. Every once in a while, somebody will pop in there and be like, hey, I'm thinking about buying a property with these guys. And it's like, brrr, just like comment after comment of like, love them, love them, love them. 75 like line kind of like description of their entire history and why they love them. It's the most powerful form of marketing that once you get that critical capacity going, scales really, really nicely because it almost governs itself once you get that part. But what was the early on, like early on until you got to that point where you could just kind of trust that to happen? Were you in there dropping memes? Like, is it just the nature of your, is it a nature of your service that people are going to want to reach out and it's the most direct level of communication? So Slack provides this like unique thing or what?
We were dropping memes. At the end of the day, it's like, we view ourselves as cool people. It's like, one thing I'm not going to ask somebody to do is be somebody else when they're trying to talk with a client. That's why, you know, the culture fit is the most important thing, is because I don't want a partner success manager. I want Jamie Pritchard to meet our clients. It's like, your role happens to be this, but you know, your role is not who the customer gets to meet. The customer gets to meet you and you represent us. And so that was always a part of it, is I just wanted to be closer to these people because I thought they were interesting and I thought I was interesting. So I was like, you know what? Now they are putting memes in our chat. So it's funny guy, actually. There's a meme of Bernie Sanders where he was in some video where he was asking for financial support. He's like, I'm once again coming to you for financial support. And now he's used that as a meme template to ask for features, where if he asks for something once and we don't do it immediately, which, you know, hey, our policy is get the community involved. I can't build something you want until the community says they want it as well, because there's other things more people want. And now he just throws that in the chat where he's like, I'm once again asking for this specific feature from the Fin team. And so now it's turned into, they're a part of it. They're part of the culture for sure.
Yeah. I love that, man. And it ties back to opening up this space for vulnerability, ties back to the idea of now this person's whole self is invested in it, right? It's no longer that, like, you know, face stomping culture of just like, I'm just working for the man. I get to be me. I get this super valuable feedback. Clients are invested in doing it. Like, you've created this like awesome, awesome flywheel. I want to welcome Don Bates, who showed up. Lori Goldman showed up. I love having y'all here. We got a heavily female audience today, which I think is a compliment always. And Isar, my partner, they're all showing up for our relationship-driven growth strategy sessions after this. And we'll kick it off in a second. I guess the last thing I want to ask you about, man, is you just came back from a conference. You crushed it, right? Like, you went out there looking to get like 60 connections and you said you came back with like 120 and you expect to close 50% of demos closed. What'd you do at the conference that was different allowed you to over-deliver? Talk to me.
So you're going to like this. I don't even think I've explained this. Did I explain this to you yet? What we were planning on
doing? I don't know anything about it. I just know you had success. I was waiting for the call.
So all the conferences that we've been to, if you look at all of the other vendors, it's just word vomit everywhere of like different buzzword, new buzzwords, combinations of buzzwords. It's like these people walking around the vendor hall just getting peppered left and right with what essentially is BS. And so we're like, you know what? It's like, we're not going to perpetuate that. So we've come up with different themes. And the theme we went with this time was a red carpet, like a Hollywood red carpet. So we got a tiled backdrop of just our logo. And then we got celebrity cardboard cutouts of Jeff Goldblum and Danny DeVito is this time. And we made t-shirts, not this one, but a Jaws themed t-shirt, where instead of the Jaws shark, it's our Fin logo, and then a Jurassic Park logo. And instead of the pterodactyl flying, it's a manta ray that looks like Jurassic Park. And so
like a manta ray T-Rex.
Yeah. And so we actually also planned to have a banner that had five words on it. Let me see, make sure it's five. MSP only security awareness training, which is perfect description of what we do. And it never showed up, didn't show up to the conference. So we literally went to a conference where we spent something like 35 grand with our logo, Jeff Goldblum and Danny DeVito. That was it. And our shirts would just had our name on them. Like, it didn't have anything about our company. So nobody knew anything about what we did other than people actually came up, they're like, you're the Finn guys. It's like, oh, I've seen so much about you. It's like, there's now this, we're starting to get out of, I appreciate that. We're starting to get, our culture is starting to perpetuate itself into the community. It's like, even if you can't work with these guys, it's so much fun to be around them. Everyone should just want to be a part of this. And I was like, all right, as long as you're cool, come along. And so it ended up working out really well because people would, you know, they'd be having a drink or getting some snacks and they'd be like, hey, I gotta know, what is this? And then we just explain who we are, what we do. They're like, they start laughing with us. It's like, and you know, if they're laughing with us, we've already won. And it's like, yeah, it's like, we're, turns out we're just cool people. It's like, we also do that. Like, this is what we actually do for you. Is that of interest at all? And some of them are like, no, not really. We're like, awesome. Do you want a t-shirt? It's like, I'm not going to hound you. Don't even let me scan your badge. I don't, come back if you want this.
Yeah.
And then others are like, actually, yeah, it's like, I'm dealing with this. It's like, it turns out it's like the exact pain you're dealing with, it's the exact pain we've been being told about for 2 years and we've solved. So would you like a demo? And they're like, hell yeah, let's do it. And that ended up working out really well. I would never recommend planning that on purpose. Have a little bit about what you do somewhere in your booth. But even if it's just a little table banner like this tall, just, but it worked out. It worked out.
Listen, man, I think you bring up something that's really interesting, which we had Matt Kleinrock on not too long ago, right? Like, he does brand experiences and trade show booths. And my first conversation with him is just like, how important the 363 days outside of the conference is, right? Like, it is so much more important than the conference itself. You, by focusing on community, focusing on deep relationships with your clients, creating this like feedback loop of adding value, getting buy-in from mentors that help steer your company so that they have like ways in, and then really focusing on the way that people feel when they're around, when they're around you, basically showed that you don't even need a trade show booth. You can just have Jeff Goldblum and Danny DeVito cardboard cutouts, and you're going to far exceed whoever was spending the you know, stupid money on everything else, man. Like, I think that's totally natural and it makes perfect sense, man. That's awesome, man. Good for you.
Yeah. And by the last day of the conference, more than half of the conference attendees were wearing our t-shirt to the after party. So it was really cool to see that. Kind of felt like all the pain that we've been through doing that very intentionally and slowly is coming together. And it's coming together for the people that we care about. So even better.
I love that, bro. I love that. Yeah. Always throw a little nostalgia with swag in there and people will eat it up too. And then we just did this at PodFest, right? We made these like bomber jackets for a couple of people with like our logo on them. Yeah. And then we like custom put like nicknames for people on the back and like varsity letters.
Yeah.
And anybody that you see with it. I mean, we made a bunch of hats that say content. Like, it looks like Compton in like Eazy-E's hat, but it says content. And we gave those out. And like, as the, you make swaggy stuff that isn't just your typical cheesy t-shirt with your logo on it, but you make like a piece that people actually want to wear, you start seeing happen it more and more. And it just like builds as a momentum, man. Good for you for a great execution, bro. I appreciate that. That's awesome.
Yeah. The less your logo is a part of it, the more somebody wants to wear it, the more brand recognition you end up getting. If you make your brand, the less of it.
Yeah, 100%. My logo is just on the little side of the hat. The rest is just a cool hip hoppy looking gangster rap hat. Connor, we're going to now roll into the relationship driven growth strategy sessions, man. I appreciate you doing this, dude. You did not disappoint. Like, I am not my usual show. Usually I'm like, there's something that people are going to learn from. And to me, the lesson of this show was just like, I want to put this guy on display and see what we learn from him. And you didn't disappoint, man. Like, I'm just really, really inspired by the way that you operate, how quickly you've learned these lessons. I'm doing whatever I can to be your friend, because I think you're going to be somebody super famous one day. And
I don't know
maybe,
about that.
maybe I'm just going to tell people I know you, man. But I'm just like, really cool, man. How do people connect with you? What's the best way to reach out? What's a good intro for you?
Through our website, actually. If you book a demo with us, it goes straight to my personal Calendly. So you can see everything. You can come meet with me directly. It's not going to be some rando. But second, on LinkedIn, just LinkedIn-Connor Swoln. That would be perfect. Come say hi to me. I'd love to connect with you and chat. So
awesome. Awesome. See you later, bud. Thanks for a great conversation, man.
I don't know about you, but I can't help but to be a little bit jealous that I wasn't that smart and that wise at that age. Am I right? Anyways, before I give you my big takeaway, which I think is kind of profound, I want to invite you to join me at the next couple of conferences I got coming up. The first one is the Badass Business Summit, hosted by Donnie Boivin, September 22nd through the 24th in Fort Worth, Texas. Donnie and his partner, Kevin, are experts at sales, at growing these networking groups, and at automation of processes. And this conference is going to be a really, really cool conference with a bunch of like a tight-knit group of like really fun people that I went to last year for small and medium-sized businesses. So if you're in that world, I highly recommend it. September 22nd to the 24th, the Badass Business Summit. It's going to be linked in the show notes. I'm emceeing the whole conference, and I am giving a keynote on how to go from zero to community as quickly as possible. After that, in October, here in Jacksonville, October 22nd and 23rd, my good friend Jesse Lane is having a business conference. Jesse is the fastest growing company here in Jacksonville. He's got a construction business, and he's also just a beast of an entrepreneur. He's launched an NFT project. He's got a sizable YouTube following. He launches online courses. This thing is going to be all about the future of just entrepreneurship in this space, right? In like the contractor service business space. Jesse is just an absolute visionary in this. I'm seeing this one. I'm also giving a keynote, TBD on what the topic is going to be, but just come to Jacksonville. I would love to show you Jacksonville as well. It is my city. Jacksonville is going places, and I think it's really important to just understand what the next hottest market in the U.S. is doing right now. ULI named Jacksonville a supernova city, and they've only done that with a handful of others like Austin and Nashville and Charlotte, all cities that have really exploded on the map. So highly recommend coming here in October. Weather's good. I'll take you surfing. All right. So my number one takeaway from this conversation with Connor is something that I haven't really shut up about since I had this show. And it's this idea that Gen Z grew up with these startups and these big tech companies as kind of like their business idols, right? And what does that mean? That means that the stuff that these companies have done is what they believe their model of success has been, right? So when I grew up, it was the high power exec kind of guy. You know, the 80s, like hard charger was my model for success. But what they've seen is companies that build in the open, right? Have this fail forward mentality, can reach massive scale by connecting people, and are highly, highly tech enabled. And that's why to them, it is so natural that you have a content stream that shows not just what your product does, but what your company does, what your people inside your company do, what you're actually working on currently. They're not going to trust you as a customer base or as an employee base unless they can look into that. So if you really want to attract the best clients, and more importantly for you in business right now, you're probably not selling to a lot of Gen Z, but you are trying to attract talent from the Gen Z generation. And this idea that building in the open, having a content stream that showcases what it is, and that you're actively cultivating a community for your clientele and your business as well, and you're leading with values and leading with this like team culture thing, is going to be a major catalyst, right? Like talent is this absolute X factor that can completely change your business. So if you're looking for that X factor, I think it made it pretty clear that Connor and his generation, this is what they seek. If you don't know how to get started with that, this idea of a live internet talk show where you, like me, can talk weekly about the things that are going on and espouse your beliefs and talk to interesting people and then unite people on the back end of it for like a strategy session and give free advice and repurpose that stuff and put it all over the internet. You know, I don't know of a better way to kick that off, right? Like I've seen mature companies that have this going on. What I know is that when you start from zero, this is the start. So if you are interested in starting something like this, our next round of the Relationship Flywheel Bootcamp, where we teach this methodology and give all our frameworks, starts in September. Let me know, right? I would love to have you on board. I would love for you to kick off 2023 already with this thing in full gear and be recruiting talent, you know, be feeding your marketing, be feeding your sales enablement software, you know, all these different things that creates this advantage from this. That's why we call it a relationship flower. And I'm not letting you go without thanking my team. Number one, I want to thank Roanne, who is my personal account manager. She helps coordinate this show and put it all out there. I want to help JP, who does all the technical execution, all the creative, all the graphics. I want to thank Gina, who's our chief heart officer and the absolute heart of our culture. I want to thank Marge, who is her right hand and the one that keeps it all together for everybody else. I want to thank Joyce. I want to thank Joanna as superstar account managers. I want to thank my partner, Isar, of course, who brought this big vision to life so far of how we can keep all these moving parts organized. I want to thank Nicola for doing all the writing and our newest content strategist, Rita. Until next time, don't forget, relationships over transactions always.